A conversation with IF&W Commissioner Judy Camuso. The scope of the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife encompasses all that the great outdoors of Maine has to offer, from birds to bears, to enjoying outdoor recreation like boating, fishing, hunting, snowmobiling, and more. Commissioner Judy Camuso oversees all of this for the state of Maine. I'm Cindy Hahn. Join me for a conversation with Commissioner Camuso to learn about her top priorities and the challenges she'll face in reaching her goals. We'll learn about her background as a wildlife biologist, her love of birds and the great outdoors, and whether being the first woman to head the department has been an issue. And of course, we want to hear from you. What are your questions for Commissioner Camuso? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling. If you hike, fish, hunt, ride an ATV, birdwatch, or just simply enjoy being outdoors in Maine, the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is looking out for you. The new head of that department is here today to talk about what she's focusing on and how the job is going so far. Joining me in the studio, Commissioner Judy Camuso. She was appointed by Governor Janet Mills to lead the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, the first woman to hold that post. She was formerly the director of the department's wildlife division and earlier in her career was with Maine Audubon. Her background is in wildlife biology, and she's an avid birder and hunter, and she canoes, hikes, and bikes. Welcome, Commissioner Camuso.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And as always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have for Judy Camuso? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And Commissioner, could you just start with an overview of what exactly the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife does? Because it's a big job that you've taken on.
Certainly. My agency is tasked with the conservation and protection of all the state's fish and wildlife resources, to oversee the wise use of those resources and to ensure that they're there for future generations. We also are charged with sort of the responsible and safe use. So we also get involved in things like snowmobiling and ATV use. And most likely, if it happens in the woods or in the fields or forests of the state, my agency is somehow involved.
Right. So, like I said, a big task, but you already were heading up the wildlife division,
which
is also no small task.
Yes.
So how different is the new job now heading the whole department?
Oh, it's pretty different. I mean, it's, we have five basic divisions: wildlife division, fisheries, warden service, our licensing division, and then our information and education division. Actually, and there's a sixth, our engineering division. So I was sort of in charge of one of those kind of silos, if you will. So now I'm trying to kind of manage all of them.
So how is it going?
It's fabulous. Yeah, I love it. It's a fantastic opportunity for me. It's a great agency with a mission I'm totally committed to, and amazing people, talented, dedicated, passionate staff, and partners that we work with. I really couldn't imagine a more perfect job for me.
Terrific. Well, it's been mentioned many times, you are the first woman to hold the position.
Yes.
And in general, you've been in a male-dominated field. Yeah, has that been good, bad, okay?
It's not without its challenges. I think as wildlife director, I sort of proved myself, or I like to think I did. But there's still obstacles, not necessarily within the agency, I wouldn't say. I think within IF&W is a great culture, but it's actually in other parts of the country and in the public. And most often it's just the assumption that I'm someone's assistant.
Oh.
Very, very regularly I'm assumed to be the secretary or anything other than the commissioner. So that's an ongoing challenge, but we're dealing with that.
By doing a good job.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, do you still get to do hands-on work, working with wildlife, getting out in the field, or are you at a desk now?
Yeah, I'm at a desk most of the time. I do get invited to do a lot of very interesting activities. So I do get out more often, but I don't manage any projects myself. So I would say probably there's a little bit less hands-on experience, but I'm working on a wider range of things now, so I get to participate, you know, in fishing sometimes and some various activities that I hadn't had the opportunity to do previously in my career. So,
and for yourself, personal time, I understand one of your big interests is birding. Are
yes.
you still able to be active, an active yeah. birder?
Yeah, I would say actually that my the time I dedicate to birding has actually increased since I've been commissioner, partly because I have less time out doing that kind of work as commissioner. I've just made more time in my personal life to do those things. So I still do a good deal of birding. I do probably more locally now to where I live, and I travel less, but I will be going on a puffin, one of the puffin cruises this weekend.
So, that sounds
yeah,
great.
I still do. I still do a lot of birding.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Well, the state budget is all wrapped up.
Yes.
And how does the funding look for your department?
It was a stressful process for me, but overall it was just really fantastic. Governor Mills and the administration was very supportive of our agency. We are predominantly self-funded, and those funds that come in either through hunting and fishing licenses or the tax on the equipment used to participate in those activities funds the vast majority of my agency's budget. But even under Governor LePage, we had started to get a little bit more what we would call true general fund monies allocated to us, and up to about 15%. But under Governor Mills' administration, we were able to achieve 27% general funds. So that's a huge leap for us. And when you look at the economic impact that my agency has, it's multiple billions of dollars in the state. It's such a small investment from the state to really have tremendous economic value statewide, particularly in rural communities.
When you give that figure of your economic impact, what does it include?
So when we look at, say, hunting, we estimate hunting has about a $1.3 billion annual impact on the state. And so that's everything from people, the equipment people buy, the places people are staying, the food they're eating when they're on a, you know, moose hunt, or the guys that they employ, the gas that they use. So we've had a few studies like that done over the years to assess the economic impacts of our industry. And so it's significant, and particularly in the more rural parts of the state where those activities are still much, you know, really front and center of people's, activities.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about those coming in from other states or just
both. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
no.
Ecotourism is also a huge element, is that right?
So absolutely. And so wildlife watching and things like the puffin cruise and eagle watches, and we have people that come here to the state. Bob Duchesne, one of our advisory council members and a former legislator, is also a bird guide, and we have people that come from all over the country to see some of the unique wildlife species that we're so fortunate to have here in Maine. So certainly wildlife watching has a very direct impact on our economy as well.
Okay. So looking at the funding you've got and all of that, what are some of your top priorities for the department looking ahead?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's so hard to narrow that down to one or two things, but my top priorities are to, first off, improve communication with the public so that they have a better understanding of what we do, why we do it, how we do it, and how it benefits them. And then within that, I would like to increase participation with our agency. And so whether that's people that want to hunt or fish, birdwatch, participate in a citizen science program, I want to have better relationship with the people of the state so they are more engaged with our agency.
How do you go about doing that?
So we have a person that is, it's called R3 program. So it's recruit, retain, reactivate people. And so I call it R5, and to include relationships and relevancy. So make sure that the state agency is staying relevant with its constituents and really listening to the public and what they want from their state agency, and make sure that we have programs offering what the public wants and needs. And so there's lots of ways we can do that. We do direct, you know, sort of targeted marketing, advertising programs to offer for people based on what they're asking us for. And this is part of a national program. It's not unique to the state of Maine. But one of the things we started when I was wildlife director was to really do public surveys, hire a professional survey company to reach out to the public and ask them specifically, what do they want for their wildlife goals? More or less the same. They want to hear from us. more or less. So we have all this data that we've accumulated, and we actually, it's a new field in wildlife called human dimensions, basically sort of incorporating the social aspects of biology into our program. And so we have all this data. And so it's kind of taking all this data that we've assimilated and then figuring out how to develop programs to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the public while maintaining healthy, socially acceptable wildlife populations.
Is there any particular issue that you would cite as an example where the communication maybe hasn't been what it could be with the public you would definitely want people to understand better?
I mean, we did a survey, I think it was two summers ago, looking at people's views on threatened listed species of greatest conservation need. And we did this survey right at the same time when we had just completed a 5-year aerial survey of our bald eagle population. So probably the last time we'll ever do that survey. We had done a whole host of press releases, sort of media events, social media posts. At the same time, it was right around the time when piping plovers were nesting. So there's been a lot of attention about that as well. And when we did that survey, 70% of the people we surveyed said they didn't know anything about endangered species in the state.
Oh.
So that's not what, you know, I want people to have a better understanding of what we're doing to work on a variety of species. And so that was kind of like a real significant flag for me. Like, we're not reaching people the way we think we are. So
Are you working with other institutions on any of this, with the universities or others, and getting the word out?
Yeah, so we have, we do work with the university, but for communications, actually, we've hired a public relations firm to help us sort of use digital marketing to get our message out to people who, say, are looking up or Googling, you know, hiking in Maine, biking in Maine, birding in Maine, so that we can use that information as any business would and push our information in front of those targeted audiences that we're trying to reach.
Okay. So as you move ahead, trying to meet your priorities, are you seeing any particular challenges or obstacles that you need to, the hurdles ahead for you?
I think that, you know, the biggest challenge for us is just getting things done as quickly as we want to. We've got a lot of staff that are really kind of geared up to try and make some progress, and things take time. So sometimes some of our state system, the RFP process, say, sometimes is a challenge for people to get through. But no, I don't really see any big challenges. We have fabulous staff that everybody's really passionate and so motivated to accomplish as much as we can in the next few years. So I think our biggest challenge is just, you know, the staff size of our staff probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the built-in dilemmas or conundrums or whatever you want to call it is that you always are balancing the conservation side with the recreation side. Mm-hmm. And I know they don't always have to be at odds, but sometimes there are competing interests. So how do you deal with it, you know, snowmobilers and environmentalists and all of that in one department?
Yeah. So for me, having worked at Audubon for 11 years prior to coming to the state, and so I've had the experience of working with some pretty passionate, what you might say, environmentalists, birders, conservationists, as well as hunters, anglers, recreationalists, also what we would call conservationists. And from my perspective, by and large, the two groups are very similar. They have very similar goals. They have particular, a species or a suite of species that they're interested in. They know about where that animal lives, what time of year to see it, when to go see it. They might have kind of a different end product, but they, by and large, are interested very much in the same thing. And so one of my goals as commissioner is to bring those groups together, try and build on that common ground and try and accomplish more. So we have been actually having kind of biweekly meetings, or it's not that regular, but every so often, every 3 weeks probably, we get together with representatives from the Nature Conservancy and Maine Audubon and the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine and Maine Professional Guides and Trout Unlimited. And we just talk about issues and what are the obstacles that we see and how do we think we can work together to get through those.
So a wildlife lover and a hunter have common ground.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody, they're all concerned. Everybody wants healthy wildlife, right? That's the bottom line. And we all want the same thing. So that's a really good starting place for me.
Yeah, and that's such a big deal for Maine.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We'll take just a quick break right now. And when we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do BCM Environmental and Land Law, announcing a merger with Thomas R. Hanna and Associates. More on their Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine practice at nhlandlaw.com. And AARP Maine, working to lower prescription drug costs. Learn more at aarp.org/rx.
In Maine, childcare isn't always easy to find. It can cost as much as a state college tuition and forces parents to make tough choices affecting their families, careers, and finances.
I don't think moving to Maine was the best move for my family. I don't. It's been really, really hard.
All this week, Maine Public Deep Dive focuses on childcare. On air and online at mainepublic.org/childcare.
The Maine Public News Tell Me More tour will be in Waterville this Thursday as Maine Public News travels the state to hear directly from you and learn what you feel are the most important issues in your community and how Maine Public News can best serve you and keep you informed. We'll be in Waterville this Thursday evening starting at 5 p.m. at Railroad Square Cinema at 17 Railroad Square. Our discussion will be led by News Director Mark Simpson with news reporter Robbie Feinberg and Andrew Catalina, Maine Public's Manager of Digital News. For more information about all the Tell Me More visits, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events or the banner ad.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today on the program, we're talking with Commissioner Judy Camuso. She leads the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. And joining us on the line now is Don Kleiner. He is Executive Director of the Maine Professional Guides Association, and he's an award-winning Master Maine Guide. Thanks for calling in, Don.
Thank you, Cindy. Great to talk with you.
So as a guide,
good afternoon, Don.
As a guide, you are actually outdoors and I'm sure very aware of how the wildlife in Maine is faring. So what is your take on that? Are there species that you see that are either overpopulated or need help, or what are your concerns as you're out and about?
Actually, one of the things that I see as wildlife professionals needing to engage in the next 20 years is their own success. I mean, there are a number of species that are now so common that they've begun to become a nuisance, and we have other species that were worried about the same thing happening. And to me, the trick is a mindset and an agency and a culture change from one of kind of restricting access so populations can grow to one of encouraging participation. And I'm curious to know, Judy, how you think you can execute that.
That's a great question, Don. I mean, historically, when state agencies started managing wildlife, as you know, most populations in North America were at an all-time low or, you know, significantly lower than population goals. And so most state agencies have had a culture of trying to grow wildlife populations while still allowing for sort of regulated access or use of those animals. And so nationally, as many of those populations have grown, and so in particular, say black bear and wild turkey, those populations have continued to grow and expand, probably much more so than state agencies anticipated they would, and beyond what we thought would probably happen. And so now many state agencies are trying to deal with how to adjust and not be so conservative in access to be able to utilize those animals. And so it is a mindset change. You're absolutely right, Dawn. And I think wild turkeys are a good example of a species where the department has stepped up and acknowledged that there are more turkeys on the landscape than is socially acceptable. So there's a difference between biologically, you know, sustainable and socially acceptable. And so I think we've acknowledged that turkeys are kind of tip that level of social tolerance. And we have, as I know, a proposal, or we just passed a rule to expand the turkey harvest to 5 birds per season in parts of the state, in southern parts of the state in particular. So I think it is a shift in how we think about things. And our biologists are, and I think most people will appreciate this, are their desire is to protect that species, as that's the resource is always the top priority for our staff, and as it should be. But it's my job, or the wildlife director or the fisheries director's job, to try and kind of guide that passion and make sure that we're still managing things at healthy and socially acceptable levels. And so I think that's going to be an ongoing discussion.
Okay, Don, while I have you on the line, I had another question for you about any concerns you have, since you're in the rural areas a lot, about how Maine's rural areas, in terms of conservation, tying in with the economy and how that's going.
Well, that, to me, we've been tremendously successful, not only on the wildlife side, but on the land conservation side in the last 30 years or so. And now we have this tremendous asset. And how can we convert that asset into something that generates economic benefit? And I think that point is driven home most strongly in the rural parts of the state. And I think Fish and Wildlife has a role there, but up till now it's been largely unaccepted. So how do we move forward on that front?
And Judy, you talked about that a little bit earlier, about tapping into the rural areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of my goals as commissioner will be to work with some of the other natural resource commissioners, and in particular Commissioner Beal, and look at ways we can try and expand or promote opportunities for people to recreate in the more rural parts of the state. And honestly, that's where we have the most tremendous wildlife, or the resource availability. There's more land, accessible land opportunities. And so I do think we're going to be looking at ways we can try and work with municipalities or regional planning commissions to try and promote additional opportunities in those areas, or at least make people aware. I was at a strategic planning session yesterday for the Department of Economic and Community Development, and every single group that reported out had identified communication as a barrier to economic growth in the state. And so people not knowing what the opportunities are. And so I think that's that's a sort of the low-hanging fruit from my end of things anyway. I don't know if you have other ideas, Dawn.
I got a whole list. But we don't that.
All right. Well, thank you then for joining us, Don. Don Kleiner is a master Maine guide and the executive director of the Maine Professional Guides Association. And you talked a little bit, Judy, about sort of the balance of these species and yet not having them tip the balance, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so there,
right,
there is the coyote issue.
Sure.
And we have a number of emails about coyotes. So I'm just going to read a couple of those. We have an email from John saying Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife has not a shred of evidence that killing coyotes benefits Maine's deer population. In fact, their own former biologist, the late Henry Hilton, said the deer herd cannot be increased by killing coyotes. He also acknowledged that killing coyotes promotes increased coyote reproduction. Killing one wildlife species simply to provide oneself with more animals to kill is nothing short of evil. I'll just read another one since we got so many of these. An email from Peggy. I raised a flock of 30 sheep on our 50-acre Maine farm, 20 acres of which are wooded. Coyotes howled all night long, yet in 25 years, I never had a coyote kill. As a wildlife biologist from the Unity College faculty explained to our sheep breeders group, coyotes are opportunists. They can be encouraged or discouraged. Their preferred prey is mice and other small rodents. And why is this a good thing? Mice are one of the carriers of deer ticks. Reducing the rodent population helps control ticks as well. Why then are coyotes brutally, savagely slain, ripped apart by dogs? Because the IFNW people have failed in their obligation to educate the public. Coyotes should be off limits to hunters. So clearly a very charged issue statewide. What is your response?
I would say this, that this is a much discussed issue at my agency as well. And I've met with a few of the people that emailed in, and we are in the very beginning phases of a fur bearer planning process, which will look at all of the fur bearers, how they're harvested, how they're managed, and come up with a long-term plan for how the department is going to manage coyotes and other fur bearers in the state. So I think we're at a place where we have a really good opportunity right now to get input from a wide range of people and come up with a solid plan. However, I will say two things. One, that the coyote program that we have in where we have coyote hunters that do take coyotes in deer yards during the winter, where we know we have deer wintering. So we know that deer are highly vulnerable during the winter. That's their most vulnerable season. And we do have agents that get deployed to minimize that predation. We do know that locally that does have benefit to the deer population in that small area. So we want to consider that. We also, that is actually was enacted by the legislature. So it's in statute for that the department is obligated to fulfill that duty. And so we do it very judiciously, and we work with qualified hunters in very specific areas where we know that there are deer at risk, and it's done during the winter season. The other thing is, having been a regional biologist in Region A, I can tell you without any question, we get dozens and dozens of calls about people upset, concerned, afraid because coyotes are in the backyard. They're howling. They're going to kill their cats. Can they let their children outside? What about their small dogs? So there are very mixed feelings on coyotes. It's not just one side. There's some people that love them. I used to have coyotes in my backyard. I used to love to hear them. There are other people who are very much don't love them and don't want them in their backyard. And we've been asked many, many times, in particular in the Portland area, to come in and remove the coyotes because the mm-hmm. public doesn't want them there. So there's a balance there. We're going to have to, moving forward, we're going to have to figure out what that balance is and kind of where we can effectively manage and keep people safe and keep the wildlife, we're not going to, keep coyotes at a healthy level. So
striking a healthy balance is your dilemma in all aspects. Okay.
Absolutely.
We will go to Leo now, calling from Wells. Hi, Leo. You're on Maine Calling.
Well, hello. How are you today?
Fine. What's your question?
I was wondering about ATVs going into the land behind my house. I own 7 acres here in Wells, and they drive through the wetlands, and they're destroying, it's not my property, but it's the mm-hmm. wetland, and they're wonderful animals, and beautiful birds, and they're driving through, like, they're slopping up the place.
Uh-huh. Do you know, is there an ATV trail back there?
Yeah, well, it's, because Wells is, become like there's three next to my all the animals have to come up through my property.
I'm sorry, you sort of cut out.
Leo, I think that your line's cutting in and out, but I think Commissioner Camuso can address that with this, probably hear this to some degree.
Yeah, so, in general, there are trails, designated ATV trails, and the Department of Conservation manages those trails. I would say that if the landowner where those ATVs are traveling does not want them there, then they could contact our office and we could assist that landowner for sure.
Okay, so thanks for calling, Leo. We have now calling in V. Paul Reynolds. He's Maine outdoor columnist and author of 3 books and editor of the Northwoods Sporting Journal. Thanks for calling in, Paul.
You bet. My pleasure.
So in your work as an outdoors writer and editor, have certain issues surfaced that are either at top of mind for your readers or controversial in terms of what Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is doing?
Yeah, I have. It's kind of ironic that I was listening to your program and I heard the caller talking about the coyote issue. I want to kind of discuss that with Judy if I could.
Okay.
Sure.
Hi, Judy.
Hi, Paul.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Congratulations, by the way, and I think that's great.
Thank you.
What I wanted to ask about is that my concern, Judy, is predation on the deer population, particularly in the North Woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from the earlier discussion that there are people in Maine who either hate coyotes or love coyotes. And I'm, I guess, sort of like the former. I wouldn't like to see them extinguished, but I think that they are intense predators of deer. And I think anybody who spends any time in the woods knows that. And I guess my concern is that I'm concerned that the coyote control program that this department runs, I hear rumors that it might be on its way out, and I'd be concerned about that. I think that would be a mistake. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong or right about that?
That's wrong. That's incorrect. Yeah. Okay. No, we'll continue. I think there's a couple things at play here. So one is the sort of coyote program that I would say happens in the North Woods, in deer wintering areas, and has been successful in minimizing coyote predation on deer during a very vulnerable time of the year for deer. And then there is another situation which I think gets some people concerned. Most people don't really engage with what happens up north. They don't see it. It's very far away from them. And by and large, they're not concerned with that issue. The other issue would be the coyote hunting in more central and southern Maine. And that I think is a little bit of a hot button issue that we will be dealing with during the fur bearer planning. But that's a very different issue than the deer wintering area coyote predation program we have.
Mm-hmm. The program that you've operated in Maine, I think in northern Maine, has been quite successful from everything I've heard.
Yes.
And I would like to commend the department on that. I think it was, you know, historically the department was dragged kicking and screaming
right
into that program,
yes,
as you probably know. And the legislature more or less forced the department to do something.
That's right.
And so I guess I hope, as Don, I think Don Kleiner mentioned, that the culture has changed to the extent that at least the department under your leadership admits and concedes that we need, in the North Woods particularly, we need to control predation. And I guess you would agree with that, right?
Yes. Yeah, I just met with Ryan Robichaud yesterday, and we talked about the coyote program. And so we will certainly be continuing that program.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
and I think...
We were going to go to a break, Paul. I really appreciate you calling in, but we got to get to some other stuff. So thank you so much for joining us. V. Paul Reynolds is a Maine outdoor columnist, author, and editor of the Northwood Sporting Journal. And we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do adventure-bound rafting, whitewater rafting, stand-up paddle boards, hiking, and camping vacations for youth and families. AdventureboundRafting.com. By Maine State Music Theater, presenting Treasure Island, June 26th through July 13th. Tickets online at msmt.org. And Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine.
Solar is booming in Georgia, driven by lots of sunshine and plenty of land. Land that once grew peanuts, cotton, and corn.
I hate to see it go, but things change, and it was a golden opportunity, so we took advantage of it.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. How the push for renewable energy is changing Southwest Georgia, plus the latest on tensions with Iran. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock, it's Ideas from the CBC, Freedom from Want, a panel discussion about inequality and health care. Again at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Commissioner Judy Camuso. Join our conversation. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-399-3566. And I will go to an email now from Kyle. He says, I'm very happy with the governor's choice and commissioners. Congratulations. Can you tell us what your opinion is on reintroducing sea-run alewives to the St. Croix watershed and the eastern reaches of the Penobscot?
Oh, happy to. So We are actually, and thank you, Kyle, for your congratulations. We are working with the Department of Marine Resources on, we applied for a large grant up to $25 million to work with municipalities in the St. Croix area to restore fish passage throughout that watershed. So we are committed to improving passage, and that will help both sea run alewives as well as many freshwater fish. It will help with climate issues and storm issues, you know, flooding and culvert, you know, sort of all the damage associated with high storm events. So we are very supportive and are working on that program.
Okay, we will go to another fish-related question. Okay. Phil in Winterport. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My question is this. How do we know what bodies of fresh water contain invasive species, and how can we identify them? For instance, I know that northern pike are considered invasive in certain bodies of water, but mm-hmm. how do I know what bodies of water I need to take these fish out of when I fish?
So we have a fabulous new regs mapper, we call it. It's an online mapping program that you can either go online on a computer and download that, or you could use it actually on your mobile device when you're out, and it'll tell you the regulations for every water body in the state. And it will, if there are special regulations, say that we want you to remove all the pike, that will show up there as well. So we do, I mean, we know, like say we know, we as in the state know, because we have staff that do surveys all across the state, and then we have volunteers that do surveys across the state for us as well. So all of the information that we have has been put into this regulations mapper so that the public can have access to that either through a web, you know, through a web portal on your computer or on your handheld mobile device.
Thanks for calling, Phil. We have tons of questions coming in. We have an email from Sue. While driving home the other evening, my husband and I came upon an obviously ill moose. Mm. We watched and waited for it to finally wander off the road. I suggested we call IFNW, thinking they might want to obtain data about moose illnesses in the area, but my husband felt we should let nature be. What would be the best call in such a situation?
So it's mixed, and we only have a certain number of staff, but certainly when there are animals that are, we have a few different moose projects going on right now, so we might be able to collect data off of that, but it would just depend on where and when that was. It never hurts to call, and if somebody can go out and collect that data, particularly on a species like moose where we have research projects, then we would. Just keep in mind that very often what the public's maybe not that thrilled with in a scenario like that, if the animal is not doing well, then the biologist or the game warden that responds very well might have to euthanize that animal. So sometimes that throws people off that they might have to actually kill it.
Right.
But I would say always just, if you have opportunity, just call into the regional office, and if somebody can go out and collect some data, then they will.
When in doubt, call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll go to Nick now in Presque Isle. Hi, Nick. You're on Maine calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Just an observation. Our club, I'm vice president of the Presque Isle Fishing Game Club, and we've had annually since 1949 an annual dinner where IFNW is honored, and recently we changed it from Warden's Night to Inland Fish and Wildlife Night, and Judy will know what that means. And, a couple of the guys that were coming into dinner that night, and Judy was there, which is a rarity for to have the commissioner at that event, were informed that the commissioner was there, and a couple of them turned around and said, yeah, where is he? And lastly, if anybody had an opportunity to listen to Judy's testimony at her confirmation hearing, know that our life in that department is in good hands, and good luck, Judy.
Thanks so much, Nick.
That's nice. Thank you, Nick. So, like you said before, still surprising people with your gender.
Yes.
We will go to Jean calling from New Sharon. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about what the department feels might be their role, if any, in impacting the decision about this corridor that might destroy or degrade the habitat of native brook trout and many other species too in the region that it would be.
You're talking about the CMP.
Hydro-Quebec power that's trying to come down to Massachusetts.
Certainly.
Through Maine.
Yep. The department provided extensive feedback on that project. All of those comments and all of our testimony is available on DEP's website. So I encourage you to go look at that. And we provided copious amounts of information on that project.
Okay. Thanks for asking that, Jean. And we have, I'm just plowing through these, email from Roberta. Is there any update on the schedule or plans for Maine Youth Field Days? As a former teacher and remembering the awesome help you gave me over the years through Maine Audubon, I'm always on the lookout for nature activities for kids, especially during the summer months.
So I'm not familiar with the Maine Youth Field Days schedule, but I could certainly ask Emily McCabe, our new INE director, and make sure that we get that posted on our website.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you another question before I get back to some of our other callers and emails. You kind of famously or infamously were involved with the bear baiting issue back in 2014.
Absolutely. Yep.
And that referendum is you were opposing the ban on bear baiting.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just kind of, we don't have to rehash it, but just why was your position to oppose the ban, and is that still an
absolutely.
Issue?
Yeah. Yep. So from my perspective personally, the reason that the department and I personally opposed that referendum question was because of the department needs all the tools available to it to manage wildlife at healthy, socially acceptable levels. And so by banning the three most effective ways that we manage black bears in the state really would have crippled our ability. And the struggle really is that most people have never seen a black bear in the state of Maine. They don't really interact with them, and they don't really understand how difficult it can be to see a bear during the hunting season, during the day, without the use of any of those other kind of added tools. And there's not very many people that hunt bear in the state of Maine. So unlike white-tailed deer, we've got several hundred thousand people that participate in that. There's only 5,000 to 10,000 people that hunt black bears. And so if we're going to keep the population at a level that's healthy for the public and for black bears, we need to be able to have access to all the tools in the tool shed, if you will. And having spent a good deal of time in the woods and with the bear program, I know just how difficult. And for me personally, like seeing an animal, most of the time when I've seen a black bear in the wild, they're running. They're moving fast. They can run up to 30 miles an hour. And for me as a outdoor person, I want those shots to be, when you're harvesting an animal, to be like clean, ethical, in the right place on that animal's body. And so for me, the use of bait and hounds and trapping are the most humane tools we have to make sure that the harvest of that animal is safe and it's ethical and it's as quick and efficient as possible.
Okay. We have a question that refers to a term you use, socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Lindell on Twitter saying, I'm wondering how we define socially acceptable levels of animal populations, and should we be using this metric over wildlife science and statistical modeling? I'm very surprised to learn that wild turkeys are considered overpopulated.
Mm-hmm. So there's kind of like what we would call the carrying capacity of wildlife. And throughout most of North America, most wildlife populations don't really reach their biological carrying capacity. What happens before that is the public gets fed up with them. And so there's too many deer coming into your garden. There's too many deer vehicle collisions. There's too high rate of Lyme disease. You know, so I mean, Southern Maine's a good example. We have a pretty burgeoning white-tailed deer population. That doesn't mean that we couldn't have the landscape probably could hold more deer, but that's not probably the right decision for that species because of the impacts on human health. Likewise with wild turkeys. And so some of those socially acceptable levels we get at through human dimension studies. So we have professional survey consultants or human dimensions PhDs that do these surveys for us and tell us. But we also get complaints. People call in all the time with complaints about damage to crop, to silage, to their blueberries, to their apple orchards. So there's this other, you know, wildlife management I think of as kind of a three-pronged approach. There's the biological approach, the straight science that our biologists do. There's the social science of what the public wants. And then there's kind of the political leg of what the legislature and the advisory council allow us to do. So there's kind of a three-pronged approach. The Wildlife Division is tasked with really coming up with the biology and what are the healthy numbers, what are the sustainable numbers, where do we need to for piping plovers, where do we need to bring the population to until we can, when we can start to look at delisting. And there's a social aspects very different sometimes, and the political aspects another whole process.
This is why you have a tricky job. Okay. We have a question from Nick. Is there any chance of being able to hunt on Sundays?
No. Well, I shouldn't say that so categorically. But so from a biological standpoint, the department could manage a seventh day in the week. But overwhelmingly, the public has told us that they don't support that. The landowners have told us that they do not want that. And so the landowners are the agents in the state that allow us to participate in these activities that we all care for, value, and love doing. 94% of the state is publicly owned. And when the landowners are coming to me telling me they do not want Sunday hunting, they want that day off, I am not going to challenge that. I fully support our landowners. We have a landowner relations program designed to help make sure that our landowners are happy, that they're having their problems addressed and their needs met. And without the landowner support, we don't have a wildlife management program in the state. And we don't, you know, there's so many things dependent on the generosity of our landowners. And they really get very little credit and acknowledgement. And so from my perspective, I will not support Sunday hunting until I have a strong, the landowners are pushing for it.
And there's no sign of that.
Absolutely not, no. Sure.
But that's different than other states, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Colorado, where I was just in not that long ago, was but 66% or something like that of the state's publicly owned. So it's a very different, landscape there.
Okay. We just have about a minute left. So just any other messages that the department's trying to get out to the general public, especially during the summer, or any misconceptions you want to correct?
No, I guess I just want to encourage people to come participate with our agency. We've got a number of new opportunities for people, both mentoring programs, people trying to get into hunting, women that are trying to get into outdoor activities, people that want to engage in citizen science, help with like counting birds in their backyard. The department has a whole host of opportunities for people to engage in with us and participate with our program. So I encourage you to join the IFNW family and become of this part of this awesome outdoor community.
And a lot of that are just strictly education programs people can sign up for.
Yeah, but they can also go out and count birds and submit the data, and you know, and we'll all contribute to how we manage wildlife in the long term. So there's lots of really good opportunities for people to go out and collect data and share it with us, and it will be used in perpetuity.
Great. So I guess we will post the website and the phone numbers there.
Great.
And put those resources on MaineCalling.org. So thank you so much, Commissioner Judy Camuso. Thank you for joining us. And
thank you, Cindy.
Judy Camuso is the Commissioner of Maine's Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Lucy Suchek took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, by visiting MaineCalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. I'm Cindy Hahn. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.